Welcome to Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should. Here's your host, Mark Davin.
All right, people, our next guest is a returning guest to the show. He was on about 3 years ago, I guess it was, and we talked about his last release. But he's got a new record. It's coming out. It's actually coming out on February 24th. You folks are listening to this now in March. So it's there. It's waiting for you to bite into. It's called Death Grip Tribulations. We have Mr. Dario Larina. How are you, Dario?
Doing good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, sure. Nice to have you back. So this has been it's been a trip for you. Last time I spoke to you, you were just getting with Zach and BLS, and it was still kind of new at that point. And you had the other record, you had your last solo record. And what's changed for you? How has your life changed?
You know, music and playing guitar has always been my life. So it's pretty much the same. I'm just in a different band, you know. And I've been with Black Label for 3 years now.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's absolutely amazing. I love it. And so other than that, guitar is still in my hands every day. So not much has changed.
But you're busier, I imagine.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of touring.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's cool. I got to tell you, this record, I didn't think you could outdo yourself from the last one, but you definitely did. This album is fantastic.
Right on. I'm glad you dig it. And I'm really proud of it. I'm excited for it. And I just feel like it's a good progression, you know, sound wise and songwriting. So
yeah,
I'm really happy with it.
Both sonically and songwriting, and I think your playing has really has gone up a notch. Is that because of all the constant touring, you think?
Constant touring, and you know, just, you know, as a musician, you're constantly growing, and with people you meet, you know, like meeting Zach and JD and Jeff and just anybody you meet along the way, everybody's a phenomenal musician, and you know, it all ties in somewhere, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You might pick up one little trick that you do in certain areas or apply it to different things in music. So
yeah,
it's just growing as a musician, you know.
Yeah, I would imagine it pushes you when you're around people like that are, you know, who was it that said it? I can't remember who says it. It was a blues cat who said, never be the best guy in the band. Because
you're always learning.
Yeah, because this way you're always learning something new, you know. And something,
totally.
You know, and that could be, you know, I mean, I've been in bands where I was with phenomenal drummers who, you know, on a talent level, the drummer was just like, wow, he's better than everybody else in the band. But he pushed everybody else to be better, which was, I thought, was really cool.
Absolutely. One person lifts the other person up. That's how it should be.
Yeah. So you're back. You're with Shrapnel again on this.
Yep.
Which is super cool. Mike's great. We had Mike on the show, and that was fun.
Oh, right on.
And it took me asking you, Greg Howe, and it ended up being Scott Thomas from Guitars Forever Promotion who actually made it happen for me.
So I finally
got to speak to Mike, and that was a trip.
Yeah, he's great.
And he loves you, that's for sure. So I want to dive right into this record because it's great, and I've got some tracks on there that really stuck out for me and my favorite tracks on the record. So you picked a song called Rituals as the opening for the album, and I thought that was a perfect opening for the record. Tell me about this track. What's going on with this?
It's just a, you know, it's a cool riff, and that's why I was like, man, this is a good opening for the album. It'll set the tone for the rest of the album. So that's why I went first. But yeah, it's just a really cool old school kind of riff, and it's gonna, you know, when I was recording, so JD played bass on most of the album, and I had who plays with me in Black Label, and also Martin Anderson, who's a former bandmate when I played in Lizzie Borden. Martin also played on a lot of the songs on my first album. He played some songs on this second album also. But JD's playing bass on Rituals, and you know, he recorded, once I was done with everything and was ready for bass, I sent it over to him, and he recorded it from his studio. And you know, I had an idea for, you know, what I thought the bass might sound like when I sent it to him. But, you know, I was just letting, I want JD to do his thing 100%. Right. When we sent this back, it was totally different than what I had expected or heard in my head, but it worked so well. I was like, wow, this really made it, you know? Yeah. So I was excited about that. And yeah, it's just got a good groove, you know. The drums have a good groove, and I mean, my drummer he's amazing. He played on both of my albums, and yeah, it's definitely
it's a killer tune.
Definitely a cool one.
Yeah, and your lead tone on here is like searing, man. It really cuts through everything. And so, what were you using on this? What guitar and amp setup were you using on?
Well, the entire album, as far as leads, is done with my Marshall JCM 800, with the exception of and running through that is my Seymour Duncan 805 overdrive.
Uh-huh.
And that's pretty much it. There's nothing else, no tricks, nothing. It's just that and a 412 with a couple mics. I think on Echoes of a Stone Heart, which is the second song, I used 5153 for the lead tone. The rhythms on a lot of the songs were basically done with my JCM 800. Maybe mixed in there with a 5153, or I think I might have used a Bogner at some point, which was just in the studio that I was at. We're like, I will try this, that. So I'm not sure what ended up getting used a lot, but majority was JCM 800 for the leads, 100%.
That's cool. And what guitar?
I play this guitar company called Lag Guitars, and there's this guitar that I used on my first album for every single solo, and it's just the way it fits in my hands and the way it sounds, I love it. It's a Lag Arcane. I call it the Pitbull. It's like a souped up Strat kind of thing. It has Seymour Duncans in there.
Cool. What kind of Seymour Duncans are you using in there?
I have the 59 Custom Hybrid.
Uh-huh.
And a TB Custom.
Huh.
That's what I have in there.
Cool.
On recommendation from Alex at Seymour, and it's a great combination. I'm digging it. I'm trying to get him in a few of my other guitars now.
Yeah, I'd say he still, you know, I mean, there are so many pickup makers out there. It's out of control, and he nails it all the time with every style of music. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So there's another track. I'm going to jump around a little bit. There's another track on here called 250, and it features Phil Campbell, formerly of Motorhead, who's got a new band called Bastard Sons.
Yep, Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons.
Yeah, and this was like when I heard. I, to be honest with you, when I saw that he was on the record, and I saw the title, I was like, oh, okay, let's see what this sounds like. I totally did not expect it to sound like it did. I mean, I did not expect it to be this, you know, that drop tuning and this heaviness, and it's just not something that he kind of is really known for. But the groove on this is killer, man. This is like breaking furniture music.
Yeah, it's definitely, that was definitely a fun one, and he ripped on it, and it came out really great. And it sounds huge. The mix sounds huge. So, yeah, that was a blast.
Yeah, that's a great one. Great one. Do you know what he used on there?
I do. I don't know off the top of my head, but I do have it.
Okay.
I'll have to get that to you.
Yeah, let me know. I'll put it in the show notes because the you two sound great together. It's like, holy crap. You guys, if you guys were in a band together, that would be outrageous.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, like I once that song was done and it was like, okay, Phil, you know, here's the sections I have in mind for you to play on. And I just sent him the track, and his son Todd engineered all his guitar from Phil's studio. And, It came out absolutely amazing. His tone on that is great.
Yeah.
Nice and juicy. It's awesome.
Yeah, and that riff is just, it's like infectious as hell. It's like a fucking virus. It's great. Really, really good. And then there's a track, I really dig the track Guardian, too.
Yeah. Guardian was just one of those straightforward power songs, you know?
Yeah, it's so cool. It's so cool. It's once again, and the cool thing is, you know, even though there's a common thread going through the record, it was kind of neat when I was listening to it, I was listening to it in the car, and I was like, First off, it's great driving music too, which is really cool. That's a big deal for me. You know, people send me records all the time, and I immediately I say, okay, I'll listen to this at home. I'll listen to it in the studio, but let me listen to it in the car first. If it passes that test, then I know it's a good record.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So yep. It's one of these albums where I definitely want to speed while I'm
yeah, you know? Careful,
yeah. It's yeah, right. And it's great. And also it's got the vibe of like, wow, I could hear any one of these songs in a soundtrack to a movie.
Yeah, man, that would be awesome. Yeah. I mean, they're all definitely strong with melody. Which
yeah.
Is a big thing for me. So
absolutely.
I definitely see what you're saying.
Yeah. Totally badass. And the soundtrack too. The title track rather is great. What way did you come up with, I mean, that title, what was that all about?
Yeah, that was, when the album was getting completed and I was working on artwork back and forth to the label, I was out with Black Label. We were on the bus somewhere. And me and Zach were just like throwing ideas back and forth.
Right.
And he came up with that. It was like, man, that fits so perfect. Especially with the image of the hands on the front cover. I don't know if you saw the front cover, but
right.
It just fits so perfect. So that's how it came to be.
Yeah. And you know, it's so interesting, you know, you've been at this professionally, right, since 2006.
Yep.
Right? So, which is now, you know, 11 years of doing this, right? It's interesting. I mean, you played with Janie Lane, you played with Lizzie Borden, you, of course, you're playing with Zach. When you're in these different situations over the years, obviously you learn something from each one that you're in. But what do you do? What's your process in regards to saying, okay, well, this is my role in this particular thing? Obviously, it's different than when you're with Zach or when you're doing your solo thing. How do you decide what's your role sonically?
You don't really get too much thought. It just kind of comes to be a certain way. It's just or a certain sound or whatever. But I mean, I'm basically just doing my thing, and it just, you know, you just fit into what the situation requires. But I mean, I'm mainly just doing what I would do, you know.
Yeah. So you're just being you.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. I like that idea. I think that's it's honest for sure. I mean, I guess people are drawn to you because of who you are and what you sound like, and that works for them. You know. What do you think is the thing that you've in the last 10 years or so? What do you think is the thing that you've learned the most, or that you've come away with, and you're saying that, you know, the thing that you've learned the most? What do you think that is?
That just life in general, or just music career or whatever, everything is a journey, and you just enjoy it, you know, enjoy every minute, really.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes, you know, you can always find yourself thinking forward, and you just got to enjoy the moment.
Yeah, that's cool. So just being in the moment. That's cool. So now, is there going to be a tour with this?
Well, we have for my new solo album, we have a show booked in Vegas, a club called Vamped, which will be my first time really playing. I'll be with a band, but you know, as a solo show, playing songs from my first album and this new album. It'll be the first time playing it live with a band, not in like a clinic setting, like in a music store or at NAMM or something like that.
Right.
So I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a blast, and that's the first show we have booked so far. And we'll see what else comes down the line.
That's cool. It'd be great for you to take this out, because you know, it's interesting too. When I was listening to this record, I was saying, you know, there's been obviously a lot of guitar players who have done instrumental records like this, you know, and thematic records, but this is kind of interesting in that it leans in metal, but there's a lot of fusion vibe to it too. Was that conscious, or was that just what comes out of you?
Definitely just what comes out of me. I mean, I love so many different kinds of music, and I listen to so many different kinds of music. I mean, my heart is in 80s, 70s style guitar playing. That's where my heart is. So that's where my roots are. But I mean, I love all kinds of music, and you know, I think it comes out when I'm writing for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's super cool. It was interesting because I was listening to this thing saying, wow, it's not your average, you know, like I wouldn't just right away just say, oh, this is a metal record, because it's really not. There's more to it than that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So you won't be going back out with BLS until summertime.
Yeah.
So this gives
That's when we're headed back up.
So this gives you a real opportunity, potentially, to get out there and do something with this, both from a promotional standpoint and playing it live in front of people.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, that's cool, man. I would love to see you in Texas. I could see you. San Antonio would eat this up.
Yeah, that's man. Sure. Well, love to make it over there.
Yeah, for sure. So. When you go ahead and you're going to play this live, have you started rehearsals for this already to play this live or no?
Yeah, we have. Actually, the first one just happened a couple days ago. So.
And how'd it go down? Good?
It went really well, yep.
So now are you using – so what's the band like? Is it just a three-piece or is it a four-piece?
I have another guitar player named Zach Hennig, and my drummer who played on both albums, who I've been friends with since high school, just like a brother. Dan Conway, who's just a phenomenal drummer. And then for this show, it'll be JD playing bass.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Great. That's cool. So it's somebody you really, I mean, everybody you're really very comfortable with, everybody you know, so you can kind of feed off each other. That's great.
Definitely.
Yeah. So what's your live rig for this? Is it basically what you used in the studio or run a studio?
Yeah, it'll just be my, I mean, same exact thing, my 800, mm-hmm. Couple cabs and an overdrive pedal.
And just
I usually run a Seymour Duncan Vapor Trail in the effects loop, not when I record. The amp is just dry with an overdrive pedal, but, uh-huh. You know, live I'll have that delay going, and that'll be it. Other than, like, you know, if I want to, I'm going to throw a wire on something, but it's basically just... That's it. Overdrive into
That's crazy. That's crazy. And this sound that you get, which is just a monstrous sound, you know, not just volume, not just gain, but there's this really, I mean, I can hear, you don't have so much gain that I can't hear the wood of the guitar. That's what I love about your sound.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, the combination of that guitar that I play, it's just, there's something in it that I love when I record and the pickups, but it's just cranking that amp up, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's great. And really, that's all you use. So what? So when you do put a wah in the chain, what wah do you use?
I have a Dunlop. Right now, I have the 535Q.
Uh-huh.
Which just is like, it's a crybaby, but has some options to like adjust the
right
the actual wah sound,
the phasal,
or how
yeah.
much range you get from that low to high frequency in the wah.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it's crybaby.
Well, that's cool, man. It's amazing that you're like that. Who are you listening to lately? What's turning you on musically?
Oh man, I listen to so much different music. But like, if I'm just at home or whatever, and I'm, you know, on the computer or whatever, I've been listening to like trip hop playlists on YouTube, uh-huh. like instrumental trip hop, which I love because it's all instrumental and there's always cool melodies and cool beats and cool grooves. So that's what I've been on to as of late. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, of course, you know, I got Johnny Winter. I got a record in my record player right now. It's Johnny Winter. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm all over the place.
That's cool. That's cool.
I mean, if I run, I'm listening to like Opeth or Amon Amarth or something. So I'm in every area.
So running to Opeth is like running for your life.
I mean, I love Opeth, even if I'm not running. But I mean, if I'm going to run this afternoon, it could be Opeth or Amon Amarth or I don't know.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Well, I mean, what do you hope? If you were to talk to somebody, all right, somebody who hadn't heard your music before, all right, if you were to meet somebody like a young guitar player, even, you know, and you met somebody and they had never heard your music before, because they're going to hear a little snippet of the record before they hear this interview. But if you met somebody and they had never heard your music before, how would you How would you describe this record to them?
You know, I would definitely say it's a 100% embodiment of my guitar playing and my songwriting, because, you know, but I mean, like you said, it's not just a metal record. There's different influences all over the place. So it's instrumental, but sometimes when you say instrumental, there's one idea that comes up, and it's definitely not that. It definitely has a, each song can stand alone. It has different flavor in all 12 songs. And but every song, you know, has a strong chorus with a melody. So yeah, I mean, it's an instrumental guitar record, you know, it's focusing on guitar playing, but songwriting and melody also.
Yeah. You know, and that's true. You said something that really made a lot of sense to me, was each song can really stand on its own. That's something I really liked about it too. It's like, you know, they work together, they chain up real well together, but at the same time, each one can stand on their own. They have their own merit. It's really a good record, man. I really like it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I wish you nothing but luck with this one, man. And I hope it gets heard by as many people as possible. I know that we're going to be turning people onto it here. Will there be a video for this record or no?
Yeah, we're actually shooting one next week.
Oh, cool. Well,
yep.
And when will there be the release on that, you think?
Probably a few days after the album release.
Okay, great. So what I'll do then is folks, you'll be able to go right to the show notes right now. And when you go to the show notes at guitarradioshow.com, you will be able to also see the video, because I will attach it in the show notes. So they'll be able to see it there as well.
Right on.
That's cool, man. And the record's going to be obviously available on iTunes and Amazon and all those places, right?
Yeah, all those outlets. If you want a signed copy, you can get it from my website, darylarena.com. But cool. It's on all the digital, all the physical outlets.
Great. And obviously you're on Facebook and all that, social media and all that stuff.
Right? Yeah, if you go to my website, darylarena.com, you can get everywhere, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
That's great. All right, man. Well, it was great to have you on the show again. And like I said, you just outdid yourself on this record, man. It's great.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm glad you dig the record. And yeah, we'll be talking soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And let Zach know. He can come on too if he wants.
I definitely will.
All right, hold on 1 second, but we're going to sign off right here. All right, I got a special treat for y'all. I was recently flipping through my Facebook feed, and I stumbled across this original artwork that had been done on a pickguard for a Stratocaster, and it was really cool. And it was all done with a Sharpie. So I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. And the artist said he had written that he did these custom-made for people, and, you know, check out my website. So I clicked on the website. And I found out that this guy is not only just a really good artist, but he's an incredible guitar player who is working on some original music. And, you know, in light of this show and what we're all about, and about turning you on to guitarists that you don't know but you should, and who knows, maybe we're going to be talking to somebody that down the road is really going to do something. So I thought it'd be cool to bring him on. His name is Sam Wetzel. He is from Chicago, and he's a killer, killer guitar player. If you go to the show notes, you'll be able to see some video that I posted up with him on there, and I think you'll be quite impressed. Anyway, here's my interview with Sam Wetzel, Guitar Radio Show, guitarradioshow.com. All right, people, our next guest is someone that I discovered in my Facebook news feed. As has been the history of this show, that happens a lot. And this guy, what struck me about him was his artwork. He had done this amazing one-off piece on a Fender Strat pickguard with a Sharpie. All right, wrap your head around that, because I can't. My stick people are retarded. So just saying. So I went ahead and I decided to start looking at his website, and I started looking at his videos, and then I realized, holy cow, this guy can really play too. So he's multifaceted, and I think you're going to enjoy hearing about him. We have on Guitar Radio Show, welcome Mr. Sam Wetzel. How are you, Sam?
Thank you. I'm great. doing all right. Saturday morning here in Chicago. I'm definitely not going to be going outside anytime soon because it's very cold.
Yeah, it's you got a lot of snow, huh?
Actually, we don't have any right now, but I mean, it was probably 50 degrees the other day, but it's definitely below 30 here right now.
Oh my God.
I usually just tell by looking out the window, see how many layers of coats people have on.
That's why I came to Texas. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I don't blame you, man. I don't blame you.
So, I'm curious to know what came first, the chicken or the egg for you? Was it the artwork or was it the guitar playing?
Well, believe it or not, it was actually the artwork. I mean, I've probably been drawing since I was in first or second grade, and I've always made sure. I've always talked to my parents, and they've always been on the same page, making sure I've had some sort of art class in my schedule, wherever it was I went to school. Just throughout elementary school and middle school and high school. And mm-hmm. So I've always sort of more or less been interested in it and just drawing in general. And I'm not really actually much of a hand painter, with a paintbrush, but most of my work I just do with the markers and just mainly line work, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't until I want to say seventh grade where I really kind of discovered Led Zeppelin. As my father brought upon me, and it more or less really just took over my life, and I kind of realized I'd rather be playing guitar than doing anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been an interesting mix of two different types of media, mm-hmm. I guess, because I've been drawing these pick guards and drawing just designs on and guitars too as well. I mean, ever since I started playing music, and my friends just handed me their guitars and said, "Hey, do you want to draw over this?"
Yeah,
I definitely do. So I would, and then process is pretty same each time. I mean, so what I do whenever I get a pick guard or somebody's guitar, I mean, usually there's some sort of glossy finish on it. So if there's plastic covering, I'll take that off first, obviously. And then what I'll do is I'll take probably 1200, maybe to 1500 grit sandpaper, something really fine, just lightly go over the surface. So it takes away some of the really soft kind of gloss surface of the pick guard or guitar finish, whatever it is I'm working on. And so it's just enough for the Sharpie markers that I use to actually stick. And so once the artwork is done, you know, hours and hours later, then I go back with polyurethane finish, and I respray some coats, probably do 8 to 10 on each piece,
mm-hmm.
and then I wet sand in between so it comes out really nice and shiny like a mirror. But I mean, that's kind of the process. But yeah, I've had orders come and go. I mean, when I first started doing them in my earlier high school years, I had like a lot of my friends who wanted them all the time, but now I guess people who have them people who have wanted them have them, and just trying to advertise here I can and pick up some more work, make some other people some custom artwork that I know that they'll like. So yeah,
it's pretty cool. I was curious to know, how much does one influence the other? In other words, your music influence the art and vice versa.
Well, that's an interesting question. I wouldn't have even thought about that. I would say how it influences my artwork. When I first started listening to music, I mean, or getting seriously involved with it, I mean, it was Led Zeppelin, it was Pink Floyd, it was Jimi Hendrix, you know. And I was just kind of discovering that whole rock and roll and the psychedelic kind of image and everything that went along with that. So I'd say probably some of the earlier pieces that I've done, not only pick guards, but like on guitars as well, probably inspired by some of like the whole 70s kind of psychedelic visuals that you might see on those drawings. I've always tried to like sort of incorporate that into my artwork here mm-hmm. and there. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of it also just comes out naturally. And so when it comes to drawing and or just being visually creative, I honestly think that it comes out a little bit more naturally than necessarily being musically creative does.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really sure if that's because I discovered one or the other first, or one might be more natural to me. But regardless, I'm completely head over heels for both. So
yeah. Well, it's amazing. Like, I'm looking at some of the artwork now, and on, folks, you can go to samwetzel.com. That's WETZEL.com, and check out some of this work here. You know, when I saw what you did, that last piece that you were showing on Facebook, I said to myself, wow, man, I want to send him a guitar body. And that was before I knew that you did bodies too. And
yeah.
Oh my God, I want to send him a body and a pick guard.
Oh, please do.
And just have him go hog wild. Yeah, I'm looking at this stuff, and it definitely resonates to me as psychedelic.
Yeah.
I mean, and how old are you?
19, and I'll be turning 20 in April 21st this
year. Okay, so here, I mean, so I guess, I mean, it's so interesting because I don't meet a lot of 20-year-olds who are into psychedelic music or, you know, or into classic rock like Hendrix and Zeppelin and Pink Floyd and... I mean, I look at some of this stuff and I go, oh my God, this is like Pink Floyd, Umma Gumma, you know, and Adam Mother Heart and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, wow. It's
born in the wrong generation.
Yeah, I often feel that I was born in the wrong generation for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So do you think, I mean, do you ever think about, you know, where this is coming from inside of you? I know I'm getting a little crunchy here, but
no, it's all good. you know, I guess in the past, I kind of haven't really looked at that because it's kind of been natural. I mean, I've always been one to kind of, well, not pay attention, but if I'm bored in class, I've always been one to doodle all over my papers, and I've never really sort of like thought about or analyzed where that comes from. But I mean, I've always just been able to kind of like pick up a pencil or a pen and just draw something and just keep going with it. And then kind of, I don't know, I would more or less describe the work that I do on instruments and the pick guards is like, it's almost like making my own puzzle pieces. If I'm not trying to specifically incorporate something that we had previously talked about or something, because I do most all of the work that I do is custom work, just because I don't really have a whole lot of other materials lying around. So when people, you know, come to me and ask me, hey, could you draw this on a pick guard? Could you draw this on a pick guard? I say, yeah, sure. And so I'll go either have them ship their pick guard to me, and then I'll just get started working on it, or I'll just go to center or something and pick it up for them, and then ship it off to them when I'm done with it. But I've never really thought about the roots of where my artistic creativity might come from. But that's an interesting question.
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting because it's really unique. It does harken back to a specific time in pop art in America. Absolutely. It's something that I don't see a whole lot now, and that's why it's kind of refreshing.
Oh, yeah.
And then I hear you're playing, you know, granted, the majority of the stuff that I've heard you play is, you know, is other people's stuff for the most part, but
that's all I have up on my channel.
Yeah. If you go to his YouTube channel, folks, you can see him play. Matter of fact, if you go to the show notes for this episode, you'll be able to, I'm going to be posting a couple of videos there as well as his artwork. So you'll be able to see that there and a link to his website. So go to the show notes and you can get there. You know, I was looking at your bio and it says that you're influenced by guitarists like Uli John Roth, who is for sure in his own way, incredibly psychedelic.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm actually going to see him. I just bought another VIP pass and a ticket to see him at this little bar called Reggie's in Chicago when he comes up here, I think on March 3rd. But yeah, oh boy, where do I start?
Yeah.
Uli's been a huge influence on me. I mean, he's probably my favorite lead guitar player, I would say. I mean, I don't know, I'm not really familiar how much you know about him, but he's definitely, just like Eric Gale's, completely underrated. I mean, if it weren't for Uli John Roth, there would be no Yngwie Malmsteen.
If there weren't Yngwie Malmsteen,
you know, who knows what there would and wouldn't be today.
Yes.
I mean, not the biggest Yngwie fan, but you know, it's just so obvious when you listen to Yuli's old records like Earthquake and Firewind that the influence that he had.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I would agree with that entirely. I think there's always these forerunners, and I think for Yuli, I think Hendrix was a huge influence.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I saw him last year at the same exact show that I'm gonna, same exact bar that I'm about to go see him in a month. Again, and it's so funny because do you know how old he is? He's probably in his like mid-70s or something.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, or at least his late 60s or something. He's just getting up there and shredding face every night. I mean, I don't know how he does it, but it was almost a little bit comical. So you know, guitar players will have their big, gigantic metal pedal board with all 52 pedals on it.
Yeah,
his was a very much more. I was a little bit surprised. It seemed like a little bit less organized. It seemed like he didn't really have quite an idea of what each and every one did. And he kind of just pointed and picking at his guitar techs, telling him he wanted more and this and more than that. And he had like four MXR delay pedals that were all the exact same pedal, but in the same chain. And I guess they must've been for all different presets. And then he's got, you know, the 70s fuzz bass that he still uses. He's so into Hendrix. It's like, if I were to describe Yuli John Roth playing to people nowadays, I would probably say he's somewhere in between Hendrix and Yngwie Malmsteen, just the kind of stylistically a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although the music is a little more esoteric itself.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. But when I first discovered him, I mean, it was like nothing I'd ever heard before. Just his phrasing and the way he can make a guitar like speak, you know, some of my favorite guitar solos of his, like on Cast Away Your Chains and Still So Many Lives Away. I mean, you listen to it and you think about all the notes he's playing, and it almost like it sounds like if there had been an overdub of a violin played along with the exact same notes as he was playing in the solo, it would have like sounded almost completely the same, because he just gets this really sing-song tone out of his whatever recording setup he was using. I mean, I don't know. I just thought his phrasing was so incredible. When I first heard it, I had to learn it.
Yeah, and I noticed that I noticed a lot of your right hand technique is kind of borrowed from there.
Yeah, well, I tried to. I mean, if you look at Yuli's right hand, he's got almost the lightest touch. I don't know if you've ever seen him play before.
Yeah, yeah.
But he looks like he's just floating on the strings, and it might be a Hendrix thing too, but
yeah, not choking up on the pick and all.
Yeah, and apparently he never warms up at all before he gets on stage. I think I read that in an interview somewhere, is that he just, you know, just goes for it as soon as he gets on stage.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So for you, when you're playing, what's your goal when you're playing? I mean, you know, is it about shredding? Is it about composition? Is it?
Well, I think it depends on the situation, but I mean, I'm a very firm believer on playing to the song and what the song speaks for, because I mean, I on my own time, I do enjoy lots of guitar based music, such as like Animals as Leaders and, you know, all the instrumental rock that I've been into recently. But I think still being in pop bands and playing with pop bands from time to time, it's really important to just play just enough and not too much. And over the years, I've kind of more learned to appreciate that and understand it as well. I mean, even using less and less gain, like the older and older that I've got, you know, just from my practicing guitar tone, I've kept over the years turning the gain knob down over and over and over, and just ever so slightly.
And getting cleaner and cleaner.
Yeah. And my, you know, I guess that's resonated through my playing a lot. I don't know. You might have to ask my family.
Mm-hmm.
I have to sit through hours of terrible noises in my basement.
Well, I mean, I've heard you. I mean, based on the videos I've seen, and I really kind of immersed myself in the videos that I saw, you know, you play everything from jazz to fusion, indie stuff, progressive rock, metal, chicken picking. I mean, it's always fascinating when I see somebody, a young player particularly, who is open enough and willing to and is able to glean all those different styles and kind of meld them into one thing.
Oh, well, thanks so much, Mark. I mean, I know a lot of kids my age that have just a musical comfort zone that's just way smaller than I would ever be comfortable having mine. I mean, it's not even specifically just playing, but listening to other types of music. I mean, I understand how, you know, you have Joe Bonamassa and the great blues guitar players who are playing 1-4-5 progressions every night for the rest of their life, and that's great because that's what they love to do and they're some of the best at it. But I could never ever do that. I mean, I feel like almost about every 2 weeks I get bored of whatever I'm listening to and I need to listen to something else.
Mm-hmm. So you're like an open conduit.
Well, yeah, I would say so. I mean, I definitely have, you know, I'm definitely obsessed with guitars and all that type of music. So, I mean, that when I'm just hanging out by myself, that's what kind of comes to mind first. But
yeah.
At the school I go to, Columbia College Chicago, I'm in the progressive rock ensemble there. And we're playing songs by King Crimson and Yes and Rush and Steve Lukather. And then I'm in another ensemble called the Recording Production Ensemble, which is just a group of kids, hand-selected group of kids from the school who we've kind of been putting together original songs this past semester, and then this semester we're going to be recording them in some of the studios here at Columbia. But, you know, they both ask very different things of the player. I mean, the pop songs that I've been doing with my RPE ensemble, it's been, you know, they've probably had like maybe 7 or 8 chords at most, and so, you know, sometimes I'm just playing a slide, just even one note for, I don't know, however many seconds, maybe 30, 45 seconds. I'm only responsible for a couple notes because that's all the song calls for, mm-hmm. you know. So it really depends, but I don't know. I enjoy playing everything, and I think that in order to or to really grow, I think that's, you know, kind of step that a lot of people need to take
mm-hmm.
if they haven't already.
Mm-hmm. Are you a double major over at Columbia, or are you?
No, I'm not. I could be if I wanted to, but I haven't really figured out how all the credits work. But this is going to be my fourth semester here.
Okay.
And it's pretty great. It's a very good school. I mean, the faculty here is great, and they've always been pushing me ever since I got here.
Yeah.
So
tell me about your gear.
Well, my gear is always changing. I'm a huge fan of buying and selling used gear, and I've been doing that ever since I've started playing guitar. I mean, the first electric guitar I ever got was an Epiphone SG, and then after I started listening to Led Zeppelin so much and my ear developed, I realized that it didn't have the bright, chimey Les Paul tone that Jimmy Page had, and so I ended up selling my SG, and then I bought an Epiphone Les Paul, and then that was my main instrument for probably a year or two years, and then I sold that to help afford a 2-amp and another guitar. And so after the Epiphone was gone, I picked myself up a Blues Junior off Craigslist. And I also got faded Gibson Flying V. It was a red one, and it had crescent moon inlays on the neck. It was an awesome guitar.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah. I actually sold it this past summer. But it was a beautiful guitar. And then after that, I believe that I traded that Blues Junior amp for a Blues or a Fender Deluxe. So I don't have that one anymore. And then I got rid of the Flying V, and I had a Stratocaster for a while. I actually got, one of the Mexican made ones, the black top strats. I don't know if you're familiar with those, but it's the ones with two humbuckers in it.
Uh-huh.
And I really liked that, configuration. Although I ended up swapping, I think at some point I probably put a Gibson pickup in the bridge and I think I put single coils in there. So I think I had Texas Specials in there for a little bit because I got kind of into Stevie Ray Vaughan for a little while, and I just wanted to match a super bluesy tone, which I'm still completely in love with. So I'm going to find a way to sort of more or less incorporate that into my Les Paul that I play with now for the next couple of years. But after that, I used to play through a Blackstar 100-watt head through an Avatar 412 cab that I recently sold as well. And now I just have my Fender Hot Rod here. It's 40 watts, just enough. But I'm also in the process of selling that.
Yeah, I noticed that. I saw that. I almost made an offer.
Oh, really? Yeah, well, I might save it for some guy who said he's going to have the money by February 20th, but, you know, people come to you and they say these things. but I'm looking to get an AC30 sometime soon for this new project that I might be starting with one of my roommates. So we'll see, but that's kind of the amp that I would like to have in the near future. But, I mean, the all-time goal is the 67 Plexi or the 69 Super League Plexi that whatever Yuli recorded those records with. I mean, that tone is not something I've never been able to escape before, and I don't think I'm going to be able to die happy until I have one.
Yeah, but you know, you're going to be, you're chasing forever. Everybody that I've ever had on this show.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody I've ever had on the show is always telling me that they're chasing it. So, you know, and you know, once again, it's not about, it's what's in your hands. It's not, you know, it's not even, it's not even the gear that much, too.
Oh, it definitely isn't the gear. I mean, your tone is in your hands, and you know, that's so crucial to guitar playing. I think that a lot of people get so caught up on the gear. I mean, coming from Northern Virginia, I have a lot of friends who have just so many pedals on their board, and they carry their huge pedal board everywhere with their nice amp because they have so many pedals on it, and they all do different things. And then, so, you know, I like, pedals are great and everything, and they can make you sound really different, which definitely gives the show a different feel and different vibe to it. But I am a big fan of the less pedals, the better, you know? And I like getting up there and just playing guitar, you know, no distractions, interference.
I think it depends on the gig you're in, too. I mean, you know, it's like...
Oh, definitely.
You know, like, at least I look at pedals a lot of time as color. You know, okay, I need to add color here. I need to add something here. This needs it because that's, especially if you're doing a cover thing, you know, it's like, okay, I got to try and make it sound like this or sound like that. But my, my going out to jam, board is three pedals. It's one of those mini, and it's literally fits inside my car, my guitar case.
It's awesome.
A mini wah. A Nobles ODR Overdrive. Have you ever seen this thing? You got to go check out the Nobles ODR 1.
Nobles ODR 1. I'll write that down.
And it's a $100 pedal, and it takes a Strat and turns it into this really throaty. If you want to get that really cool bluesy sound, that's a great thing. And then honestly, a $10 delay that I got.
$10 delay.
Yeah, it was a
tell me about that.
One of those Bai Yangs. You ever see the Bai Yang?
Oh yeah, I think I've heard of it.
Yeah,
before.
It's like, I think it's the AD10, and it's it's, you know, and I just slapped it on there, and it sounds really good. And if it gets if it gets ripped off, I'm not going to freak out. You know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
But then I also have another pedal board with like 10 or 12 pedals on there, and that's all about like if I'm going in to record or I need I need color. But yeah, for the most part, I agree with you. I try to do less pedals. If I can go right into the amp, that's even better. If the amp is really happening,
sure. Yeah.
So you've got we're looking at a possibility of you giving us some original music in the near future.
Yeah. So I haven't fully put together these songs, but over my winter break, I ordered an interface, so I've been fiddling around with some recording, just here at home. But I have tons of friends who are huge into audio arts design here at Columbia, and so they're giving them the heads up on it, and so I think they're all going to try to help me record in whatever studios I can really get my hands on, which there are quite a few around here. And I have a friend Brian Olivo, who's in a good band called Under Fire, if you'd like to check him out. And he's got this huge, incredible home studio that he built by himself in his house here in Chicago, and it's pretty awesome, he completely took over his living room, and so it's just like this huge mic'd up jam space, and it's awesome. So I'll probably try to do some recording there. But as far as what's going to be on the out or the EP, I can't really say yet, but I mean, it's going to be a little dash of everything. Probably, like I said, a fast country song. Not that I'm super into country music, but it's just really fun to play.
It's a lot of fun to play.
Yeah, and definitely there's a riff that I wrote when I was in Mexico this past winter break as well. So probably some world sounding music, and probably some just straight up rock. I mean, it's going to be more of contemporary sounding rock more than classic rock,
and primarily instrumental.
Yeah, primarily instrumental, definitely. And I do some singing from time to time, but I'm not incredibly passionate about it. But, you know, if I ever get placed on a song that definitely needs backup vocals, I'm not shy to do that at all. I just have trouble memorizing lyrics, so I've kind of stayed away from the whole singing thing my entire life.
So tell us a little bit about Zappanale Festival.
Oh, Zappanale. Wow, where do I start? So, yeah, that was an experience. I mean, like you mentioned earlier about just being open to playing and performing different types of music. So are you familiar with the School of Rock program at all?
For sure. Yeah.
So I was part of that. And then I was part of the house band at the Vienna School in Virginia. And our house band is the band that if a local company hears a School of Rock, they will call up School of Rock, and the house band will go play the show there, because it's more or less the best of the best kids at the school, and so they all perform at shows and represent School of Rock as a whole. And they do that for events across the nation. But somebody came to us, or I think we got an email from our director or something, that there was probably 9 or like 11 schools up and down the East Coast that all their house bands were being given this invitation to partake on this 2-week tour in Germany that was going to be playing only Frank Zappa music. And before then I had never heard Frank Zappa. And so all I heard was Frank Zappa music, tour Germany for 2 weeks. And that's all that I needed to hear. I mean, it really wasn't much more than that. And so, I mean, of course, I went home and I did some researching and studying and listened to like all 60 albums. Not all 60, but, you know, he died with probably at least over 50 albums worth of material. So I didn't know where to start. But, you know, I just, you know, straight into Don't Eat the Yellow Snow. It was just a kind of a laughing goofball snowball from there. But so after that, I auditioned for a spot as a guitarist to be part of the Z Team, as it was called. And I made the spot. And so there's probably about 80 people who auditioned. And I think there was 3 or probably 4 of us guitarists who went over there. And we trade off on some songs. So we had, I think by the end of the tour, we had a 40 to 50 song set list. So he would go up and play some songs, and I'd go play it. A handful on stage, just because they were so complicated, and each one of them took so much time for us to get all the way through perfectly. Who our director was really, really, really on the ball about, Eric Svalgard, who's incredible, incredible musician. I mean, really inspiring to me. And he really pushed us all as hard as he could. I mean, he would get angry and he would throw a temper tantrum if you didn't learn your stuff. And as one should, you know, it really helped us prepare for the real world. So it was, so we had our rehearsals in Delaware, and I was in Northern Virginia. So I had another friend of mine who was in Silver Spring, Maryland, and it was about 45 minutes to his house that we would carpool, and then a 3-hour drive to Delaware. And we would have a 3-hour rehearsal there, and then that Saturday we would have, you know, we would drive 3 hours back, and then it would be 45 minutes back to my house. And between the beginning of February and I think towards the end of June, we probably did that 15 times or 16 times, just made that trip up for the rehearsal. And then after that, you know, we loaded all of our stuff up, and then we were over there in Germany. It was my first time across the pond, or just out of the States in general, so it was a huge eye-opener for me. I mean, it was incredible. It was awesome.
And what did you find as far as Zappa tunes? What did you find the most challenging?
Oh, jeez. Well, they're probably so difficult that I haven't played them until this day, if that doesn't say anything. most difficult. Oh, boy, that's a good question. Well, I'd probably say there were just all these, like, individual runs. I mean, you know, Frank Zappa's music is so complicated, and there's just, like, a lot of it just never repeats itself, and that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
You know, if you'll have, like, a 5.5-6 minute instrumental song, and, you know, you just got crazy 30-second note runs here and there all the time in every single chorus. I mean, we would have to go home after listening to these songs together at rehearsal and just spend hours and hours and hours being able to not only figuring them out very specifically, but being able to play them up to speed with the song. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was all sorts of challenging, and I, you know, beforehand I'd never even heard that type of music before. Mm-hmm. And so I had some other friends who, you know, could have gone on and did that tour with us, but they weren't into Frank Zappa's music, and I just thought, how could you not be into this? I mean, I know it's really weird and everything, you know, very odd, but hell, we get to go across to Germany and play shows to Europeans for 2 weeks, and like, who doesn't want to do that? And I was really surprised that some of the kids my age didn't want to do that, you know? I mean, that's definitely an opportunity that I would have never, ever passed up being 17 years old.
Right.
And so they all missed out, but I had the time of my life. It was awesome.
That's cool. That's really good. Well, I got to tell you, I'm so glad that you were willing to come on the show and do this, because
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I was so impressed by what I saw, and then I was even doubly impressed by what I heard, and now I'm very intrigued. And looking forward to hearing what you're going to give us as far as original music, because based on what I've heard you and seen you play, I really think you've got a voice, and I'm looking forward to hear what that voice has to say.
Awesome! Thanks so much, Mark.
Well, it was great having you on, and please stay in touch. And we're going to sign off right here, but you hang on, okay?
Sure, sounds good.
Thanks a bunch.
Yeah, thank you.
New episodes of Guitar Radio Show air Wednesdays on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podplay, Player FM, Podomatic, and of course on GuitarRadioShow.com.